Welcome to another edition of the Untold Patriots Stories podcast with Scott Prusak and Dave Usher, where you'll hear stories told by the players and media members.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Untold Patriot Stories podcast. I'm Scott Prusak, along with Dave Usher. This podcast is brought to you by New England Pitcher, where you can get any of your autographed memorabilia needs, whether it be pictures, photos, helmets, whatever you need. New England Pitcher has it, and you can take a look at their website at newenglandpitcher.com. Our guest tonight is the executive producer of the Felger and Maz Show, and they actually just the winter ratings just came out, and it is the most watched and listened to program in Boston, right, and pretty much all around the world, 2-6 slot. And we have.
I'll go with that.
Yeah.
And we know it's not Felger, so it must be you.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, I mean, this is a fact, not an opinion, is that when I jumped from EEI in March of 2011, the ratings for Felger and Maz did go up 3 full points.
There you go. Hey. So he started talking before we actually introduced him, but he's known as Jay Stu, is one of the nicknames. Jimmy is another one.
Chirping Menace is what Maz calls me, and I have identified myself as that already on the show.
There we go. Jimmy Stewart, welcome to the podcast tonight, Jimmy.
I would tell you that there are times where I have diarrhea of the mouth.
Yeah.
So my apologies for that. Untold Patriot Stories.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Well, we want to hear some. So, Dave, why don't you kick this off?
Hey, glad to have you on.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it. Like, I'm a radio producer, and by definition, I should be not seen or heard, but somehow I've weaseled my way into being seen and heard. So thank you for having me on.
No worries.
Well, I mean, how can you not? I mean, I'm doing my research. It's a Wonderful Life, Rear Window, Vertigo. You're just
well versed.
So I didn't see It's a Wonderful Life, the movie, until I think around 2013 2014.
Oh wow.
Had never seen it. Glenn Ordway was the first one who did the Jimmy Stewart impression when I started as an intern at EEI. Craig Mustard, who I worked with on weekends, used to do an impression, right? And Jim, like, Glenn was the one who was like, oh no, you're Jimmy Stewart going forward, because more people will recognize that. Okay, yes, Mr. Ordway. Of course, Mr. Ordway. You're right, Mr. Ordway.
The godfather of radio, right?
There you go.
If it's not for Glenn Ordway, I'm not in radio, so.
There you go.
Sorry, I had to bring that up. Just, you know, my last name's Usher, so I had followed the house of my growing up, so, you know, throw that in there. But
you shouldn't be apologizing. It's your show. You do what you want. You play your CDs.
There you go.
You know, we've got the draft coming up, and I know you are all famous for your draft board. And you look like you might have a couple hits at, or possible hits at, wide receiver this year. But let's take a stab at the draft outside of the board. What are your thoughts on them keeping the number 3 pick, and who would they pick?
I think if Jaden Daniels is there, he's the pick. I think anything else, they want to move down. The Patriots want to move down. I think there's a general consensus. I think there's not a general consensus on it. I believe that ownership wants Jaden Daniels. I believe that Elliot Wolf, Gerard Mayo, if they're forced to take a quarterback, they want J.J. McCarthy because he's a safe pick. He's somebody who's run a pro offense. You know all the details.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think also, too, I think Gerard Mayo's coaching style is going to come through, that he's a law and order Belichick disciple. Protect the football, win on defense. I think that's what we'll find out he becomes. So that would be J.J. McCarthy. And I think that Alex Van Pelt, Ben McAdoo, I think they want to take a chance and try to coach up Drake May. And so I think that if the assistant coaches can talk the Patriots into taking Drake May at 3, they take Drake May at 3. Now, what's the trade offer? Is it the Giants? Is it the Vikings? Is it the Raiders? Tell me what the offer is, and I'll tell you whether they take a guy or not. I generally believe that they see J.J. McCarthy as lower than the number 3 pick, Drake May, by all accounts, is going to be the number three pick. It's just a matter of if it's the Patriots or if it's another team. Who's trading up with the Patriots?
Now, do you see...
That was a bit of a wordy answer.
It was a good answer.
Just made me think, to round off the quarterback talk. Do you think that a Michael Penix or a Bo Nix, if they trade down, is someone that could lead their offense?
Do I? The left-handed quarterback kind of scares me if the name isn't Michael Vick or Mark Brunell or Steve Young.
Jim Zorn.
So probably yes. But again, I think you want – so I'm not – I don't watch a lot of college. I'm not a college football guy.
Fair enough. Yeah.
So I'm going off of what other people are saying about quarterback X, Y, or Z. You get the right quarterback, you get the right system, anybody can be a star. Anybody can get to – Brock Purdy got to a Super Bowl with Kyle Shanahan overmanagement system. So, and I do know from talking to people around the NFL that a quarterback will go, if you're a free agent on the market, you're a free agent quarterback, they'll look at the defense. How's the defense? Am I playing with short fields? And then it's, am I getting pass protection? Do I have weapons? So on. So if you draft a quarterback, whether it's those two that you mentioned later in the draft and you have good stuff around them, which by the way, the Patriots don't have good stuff around them, nobody can win. But if you have Kyle Shanahan, if you have, to a degree, the Chiefs and what they have around it, I could go in there and win.
Right.
And I'm a righty, so.
So you brought up a lot of good names when you were talking about who preferred who at quarterback. But in light of the news today, you left out a really big, important opinion on who wanted who for quarterback. So what is Jonathan? Who does Jonathan Kraft want at quarterback? Because it seems like
I said that to open up when the host isn't listening. I thought I said that Jaden Daniels was the pick of ownership, was the favorite, was the chosen son of ownership.
Okay. So the other, I'll kill two birds.
Sorry to blow up your spot on your podcast.
No, that's all right.
So I loved it.
I'm going to kill two birds with one stone. Please on do. This one. So. What's Jay Stu's phone here? And tell us the origin of Jay.
Okay, so the origin moment of Jay Stu's phone was probably the Jason McCourty move, which was wrong, by the way. So years ago at the trade deadline, I had been told by two members of the Patriots organization that they were getting Jason McCourty at the deadline. Went to air with it. Because I felt good about the two people in the Patriots organization who had told me about it. And I think, I never got confirmation on this, but I think there was something they wanted to renegotiate his contract and there was something on the physical. And so the deal fell through. Because I remember in the email being like, I think the Patriots are about to get Jason McCourty. And I think it's going to be for like a fourth round draft pick or a third round draft pick. And so we went to air with it because one, it's interesting. And it's the trade deadline and everything else. And so I got buried on EEI. Dale and Jerry Thornton couldn't wait to bury me on EEI. So good for them.
Yeah.
For being wrong because I was wrong. Twitter had a field day because I was wrong. And so on and so on and so on. So move forward to, I started getting, because I'm a gossiper by nature. And if the gossip's interesting, I'll put it out there. So what happened was because if you've been around teams enough, they'll tell you things and or you'll ask the right question, you'll get the right answer. And so one of the things, the Celtics have always been great to me because I was down there, quote unquote, covering them. I was around the team when they were bad, when it was, you know, fire Doc, right? And that night I was in the stands chanting fire Doc, right? But I was around the team like when the press benches were courtside and they weren't these fancy seats that I was sitting in. Like I was there. I actually just did some spring cleaning. I found a bunch of my old press passes. So I have proof that I was around the Celtics and I was around the Red Sox. And to a degree, I'd pop into a Bruins game once in a while. I wasn't really around the Patriots unless it was training camp. But you talk to people, you socialize with people, you build trust with people. So the people who told me about the Jason McCourty thing, I trusted. You know, there's other things, but like, when, especially when I worked at EEI, I'd be like, oh, I think this is going to happen. And it would get blotched out. Like it wouldn't make it to air. It wouldn't make it to, yeah, you know, we didn't have Twitter then. We had like Facebook or whatever.
Yeah.
Or MySpace or
yeah, MySpace.
Whatever it was.
Tom was
so I'd go to like person X and I'd be like, oh, like I'm hearing this. They'd be like, oh no, that's not gonna happen. Ha ha ha. And that would happen. And but you know, I'm a producer, which will always be a strike against me. Right. And that's the reality. This goes to the I shouldn't be seen or heard because I'm a producer, and that's the strike against me. And so you develop these connections, and then it's like, well, you got the Jason McCourty thing wrong. But you know what? It was interesting. It got us through a trade deadline show, so okay. And then I start getting these Celtics draft picks right. So then it's the Kyrie Irving thing. And this was the big hit of the J-Stu phone. Was 2 weeks before the Celtics got Kyrie Irving, we had Bedard in. Sorry, I didn't turn my phone off. Actually, a very important person, but we can deal with that later when we're done.
You can call for some minutes if you want.
J-Stu is
No. This person will not want to be conferenced in. This person is a very good source of mine, a very good friend of mine as well. So I heard that the Celtics and the Cavs were exchanging medicals on Kyrie Irving. We had Bedard in. And at 2:15, I walked into the studio and I said under my breath to the group in the room, it was Felger's, Bedard. I don't think Maz was on the show that day. It might have been Murray and somebody else doing updates. And I said, Celtics are exchanging medicals with the Cavs about Kyrie Irving. And so then Bedard leaves and then we get to 5 o'clock and Felger's like, I don't know why I didn't stop everything instead of prattling on about Connor McDermott and the preseason stuff. But Jimmy, what are you hearing? I was like, I think the Celtics are exchanging medicals with the Cavs on Kyrie Irving. I think a trade's happening. I think this is the genesis of the trade. And 2 weeks later, the trade happens. So that was the big hit on the phone. And looking back, and I've never had anybody confirm this, and I'll shut up eventually because now I'm rambling. I think when they traded out of Markelle Fultz to get Jason Tatum, everybody was like, oh, they're going to trade number 3 for Paul George. Nope. They had started on Kyrie Irving, and so they didn't need a point guard. They didn't need a young point guard, so they traded down, and they were going to draft Jason Tatum, or if Josh Johnson doesn't get tampered with by the Phoenix Suns and the Celtics land the plane where he's supposed to have their workout, maybe it's Josh Johnson, who is now, I believe, out of the NBA instead of Jason Tatum as a member of the Boston Celtics. So that's Kyrie Irving was the big hit. It started with Jason McCourty.
And your phone will just randomly go off with somebody giving you some stuff. That's kind of how it works, huh?
Yeah, you build friends and understand too, like especially lately, like my phone has been swinging and missing because all these organizations are literally like keeping everything on lockdown. Right. Or they're trying to as best they can. And so that's another thing is, and I know this and I understand the game. And to a degree, it's irresponsible. Realistically, it's irresponsible. But like, I'll be like, oh, that sounds interesting. Let's put that out there. And I don't have journalistic integrity. I'm right. A gossip guy, yeah. Right? Like I'm not Jackie McMullen. I'm not Mike Reese. I'm not Bert Breer. No, I want gossip. And if the gossip's good, it'll get out there. It'll be put on the air. So I do think that sometimes people will feed me something and it will be purposely because they want to hear the reaction to it.
Right,
and cool. they're harmlessly effing with me. Which I'm fine with because it's interesting and we can get an hour out of it. So go nuts.
Yeah, there you go. So Dave, get us back on track with Pat stuff, Dave.
Sorry.
No, that's fine.
Diarrhea of the mouth.
Since we're unrelated, I did have another question that kind of goes into your journalistic integrity.
Or lack of it.
Yes, yes. you obviously we found out that Tim McCone got the coveted seat on on Zolak and Bertrand, and you had had you had handicapped this, I guess, at some point, and thought Joe Murray might be the right person for the spot. Matt McCarthy second and Phil Perry third. Where was McCone in your standings?
Okay, so at the time I said on the off-air show, I said if Joe Murray wants it, he's probably the favorite. I would go with Matt McCarthy on this. And Phil Perry was a name that Felger had mentioned, and he had been getting a lot of reps. So to answer your question directly, I like Tim McCone. I like Tim McCone a lot. He'll fit in well with them. I didn't think that he was a real candidate because I thought he had a TV job, a full-time TV job.
Fair enough.
Okay. And he wasn't getting a lot of reps at the time. So he wasn't really on my radar. I loved him. Tim, I produced his first Celtics at Seven show. He was filling in for Adam Kaufman. And I said to Tim, I said, you're talking to yourself for the first 15 minutes of the show. You can't talk to me. You can't take a call. You have to learn how to monologue. And he did. Wow. And away we went. And the first time that I actually co-hosted was with Tim McCone.
Oh,
so that was a cool little thing. Like the Sports Hub was desperate. And they're like, can you like be a two? Yeah, I can be a two. No problem. They were desperate that weekend. So me and Tim McCone did a 3-hour show, which was nice of them to ask. But yeah, I like Tim. Tim will fit in well. He's got a dry sense of humor. He can host. He can do anything you want him to do. But he just wasn't on my radar because I was like, I think he's got a regular TV gig. So why would he leave that for us?
Right.
And I agree with you. I think he'll do well. But it was timely, so I wanted to ask.
And in full disclosure, Dave's in a little mourning because he's a huge Phil Perry fan who we actually saw on Thursday night, and a little bit of a man crush, Jay Stu.
Well, so I thought Phil Perry was going to get. I thought Phil Perry, with as much as he was doing it, was going to get the job.
Yeah.
I think I said this on the off-air show, so I'm not telling a story out of school because I've already told it out of school. So Michael Hawley did the third chair. It was like the second time he had done it. And of course, I love Michael Hawley. I worked 6 years with him. Like, great guy. Great guy. And I heard somebody of a high-ranking management position saying, don't let Michael Hawley leave the building without a contract. Which obviously didn't happen because... Right. Michael's got TV with Felger at night. He's got TV with Michael Smith, 3 to 6 on Peacock Network. He teaches.
Yep.
He's probably working on a book because when he's around, when he was at Gerard Mayo's press conference, my antenna went up.
Yeah.
Because Michael Hawley in a suit at a press conference, antenna goes up. Something's going on here.
Okay.
And don't forget, he narrated the Dynasty primarily.
He was in that a lot, wasn't he?
He was.
He was in that a lot.
Right.
So my antenna goes up with that stuff. So I think Michael, and I don't want to speak for him, but I think Michael loved being back in a radio studio that was very different from the culture that him and I worked in together for 6 years.
Right. So Dave, I think you have a perfect opportunity to bring something up because you just mentioned it. So,
oh boy,
the Dynasty.
Oh,
what a trash! I'll let you ask your question. I'm sorry.
No.
There's no question. You're right. It's
I'm gonna let Dave be the kinder side, and then I'll take it after that.
Well, let's just say, Jay Stu, that. Going into this, Scott had always said that Kraft talks out of both sides of his mouth.
Correct.
And I was a bit of a Kraft defender, saying that, you know, I'm glad he kept the team here. He writes the checks and that, you know, and I gave him the benefit of the doubt for everything else. And then I watched this and I went, much as I pained me to say it, I'm like, damn, Scott, you're right.
Oh, where do I start with this thing? It started out wonderful. first two episodes I thought were, yeah, were really good.
Yeah. And it just was David Nugent.
It just spiraled into a hit piece. That's all it was. It was a hit piece. And I think what happened was, because Bert Breer wrote about this in his Sports Illustrated column, that it's hurting his it's hurting Robert Kraft's bid for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
The last 4 years of Belichick and this documentary, because Robert Kraft's like, oh, I did this. This was all me. And now it's hurting him amongst the voters. And Bert Breer talks to people.
Yeah.
He talks to people, let me tell you. So when Bert says something, it may not be a direct hit on the bullseye, but it's at least on the board. Right?
Yeah. Now, don't you think that this documentary was meant to do the exact opposite and strengthen his
100%.
Position? Yeah.
100%.
How about backfired?
It horribly backfired. And it just shows that they really don't have the finger on the pulse, and that it was all Brady. Like, they lucked into Tom Brady. And don't get me wrong, Bill's not a bad coach. But is he 6 championships head coach? Doesn't feel that way, does it?
No, not now. Not now. No.
It feels like it was Bill's a good enough coach to get you there. Brady's the player that gets you over the top. And like, Brady's the Hall of Famer. Bill will go into the Hall of Fame. I don't think Robert's getting in.
Yeah.
Unless it's like 20 years down the road and it's because Jonathan paid off somebody to do it, or Robin Glazier, whoever's running the team. I mean, Jonathan Kraft has a great spot. Like, he can be the shadow owner. Yeah. Like, he was supposed to be at that Mayo press conference, and it's like, oh, something came up. He's not here.
He had a pay for
it. They don't have a real feel good for the room. And to bring it back to the whole draft thing, I'm not convinced that they like anybody beyond the first two guys, Daniels and Williams. And if that's the case, pick a tackle, pick a defensive end. Pick a player, pick Marvin Harrison Jr. Pick a player that you actually believe in, not something that you think that the fans are going to cheer or boo, right? Like, pick with conviction. And then when you're right, you've now earned the trust of the fan base. Like, Richard Seymour at 6, Ty Warren, Jerod Mayo, you move down to get Jerod Mayo. Logan Mankins was an excellent player. So, like, if you've got conviction in your pick, like, even if Cole Strange was a bad pick, they believed in it, right? And they had earned the right to be like, okay, well, we don't like the pick. The coach of the Super Bowl champion Rams is laughing at your pick and should have been a third round pick. But if you believe that you need a guard and you think this guy can be a guard for the next 10 years, okay, you've kind of earned the right to make that decision because you got Logan Mankins right. You've gotten other players that seem to be reaches right, and they fit your system, so go for it.
But now, so I'm going to have two questions for you. So the first one is, to off what you just said, if they don't like either of the first two guys, do you think they're better off trading out of that third spot and filling multiple positions, you know, whether it be tackle, wide receiver, and taking a Penix or a Nix or somebody like that and trying to fill more holes?
I think whoever they take at quarterback, if it's not Jayden Daniels, is going to fail anyway. I would, if I'm them, I want to move down to the point where I can get the best left tackle possible. So if that's 6 with the Giants, I'll go there. It's boring, but you have to build your team from the lines out. Yeah. That's like, I feel like that's like football 101.
Yeah.
Is you build from the lines out. And so you get a left tackle at, say, 6. You see what's there at 34. Is it, am I looking at it and go, well, there's a really good center there. There's a really good defensive lineman there. There's a middle linebacker there. Maybe I take that. And then when you get to the third round, it's like, okay, I need a receiver. I need a quarterback. I need a running back. Like, what else can we get here? Because the way that I've always understood the draft is a first round pick should be a day one starter. If it's a quarterback, maybe that's an exception and it's a week 10 starter. But your first round, you should get a 4-year starter. Your second and third rounds are supposed to be, well, they're in the top, they're going to be rotational players, but they'll make your roster. They'll be contributors for those 3 or 4 years, but they might not necessarily be stars. Anything after the fourth round is a crapshoot. Yeah. That's how I've always understood the NFL draft.
So to finish up on the dynasty, and then I'll turn it over to Dave. Do you think his silence in this whole thing is even more damning than anything else by not coming out and saying that he, you know, I mean, I know he made the one comment that he didn't like the way it was portrayed, but if you were blindsided by that and it was made by Kraft Productions, so I mean, come on. And then, you know, you heard all the stuff, you know, they didn't see it until it was out, which is bullshit. I mean, call it what it is.
Oh, you can cuss on this.
Okay, oh yeah, good. Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Let him rip then.
So, you know, you got that. So, but do you think that since he hasn't come out and denied everything he's like everything that was portrayed in that, do you think that is saying speaking volumes?
Well, I think the Patriots would tell you that ownership is not involved. And I think Tommy Curran reported last night on TV that there has been no trade offer that has made Elliot Wolf or anybody else call up to ownership for approval. I believe Tom Curran. I trust Tom Curran.
Yep.
I know that. This is definitely telling a tale of our school, but I won't tell you the two people who told me about this. I know that yesterday there were calls coming out of Gillette Stadium trying to emphasize the point that ownership is not involved in this and that it's going to be Elliot Wolf's decision, which is interesting because Elliot Wolf doesn't have a contract beyond June 1st.
Right. Right. They haven't endorsed him fully. Right. Yeah.
But this is the consensus decision of 9 people, and ownership will sign off on it. But then you see the other reporting, and here's the thing about the reporting is that like Diana Rossini or whoever else is saying ownership is heavily involved in this. I believe that somebody is telling them that. And I believe that they could be lied to. Tommy Curran could be lied to, but I would say Curran, Breer, a bunch of people locally have been getting everything right.
Yep.
And yeah. I can kind of see why and who talks to who and everything like that.
Right.
So I would say that, so I tend to lean to believe Breer and Curran over Diana Rossini.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Interesting. So what's your take on, you know, we're talking about Tom Curran, and he floated out there after overseas game that they might be moving on from Belichick. And he reported that. And again, I think it was something that was floated out there, is my opinion. But what were your thoughts when that was made news?
I think I doubted it because I didn't think that they would want to pay Bill for that extra year. Mm-hmm. Like, I think they're on the hook for 25. Basically, Robert Kraft paid $25 million to Bill Belichick so he could get an 8x10 photo on his desk at that goodbye press conference. Like, I wish I had that kind of money to throw around and just do that, but.
Well, he's like that in free agency. Wait a minute.
Oh, wait a minute. No, because he can't sit on his desk. Like,
earn some cash.
He can look at it and be like, oh yeah, that's my Hall of Fame coach. And you know, he can have it in his mind that like, I got my 8x10 photo and I got my championships and everything is good and it's only money and I can make more.
Yep.
So I think I was a little shocked. I didn't think that necessarily it was accurate because I just couldn't see them moving on from Bill so quickly, but whatever happened, and you could tell at the end, Bill was just running out the clock. So he knew.
Absolutely.
Right. So Curran either got it from Mayo. He got it from Belichick. He got it from ownership. Like he got it from somebody like who was in the conversation. But I still was like, no, it can't. It, like, it can't be like this. They can't be leaking out that he's done at the end of the year, this like in week 8 or whatever the Germany trip was. Like, so I didn't believe it, and Curran was right.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because I feel the same way. I think it was he got a credible information, and I think they may have used him for the leak to get the temperature.
Oh, I totally agree with that. But wow, like, and even like at the, I know that the dynasty helped Bill more than it helped anybody else. And so probably the last time you see Bill around New England is at the Brady ceremony in June.
You really think he's going to come?
Absolutely. I think he'll do it for Tom Brady. Yeah. Okay. I think they've kind of figured out their relationship. I think Tom and Bill have figured out their relationship, and Bill will show up for Brady. And I bet he's great. He'll get a great ovation that night. They'll put 80,000 into the building, and I know it only holds 68, but they'll get 80,000 in there. Okay. It'll be fun. It'll be like, you remember Larry Bird night?
Oh, yeah.
It'll be like that.
Yeah.
It'll be great.
So to follow up on that, the second Hall of Fame coach that he fired in his ownership, right?
Because he fired Bill Parcells.
Right.
Pete Carroll's going to the Hall of Fame too, by
yeah,
the way.
I was going to say.
Yeah, so that'll be third.
That's the future.
So here's my next question for you. If Jay Stu's phone gave you this answer, what would the answer be? Is Robert Kraft going to get booed on Tom Brady night?
I don't think on that night that they'd boo.
For Robert Kraft, you don't think so?
No. Not on that night. Not on that night. If you were telling me that it's opening night, if you're telling me that the Patriots home opener September 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, whatever it is, and they go through the opening lineups, you know, the head coach is Gerard Mayo, yay, and the owner, Robert and Jonathan Kraft, boo. I could see a percentage of Patriots fans booing the owner. Right? In that setting, in opening day, regular season, not on Tom Brady night. Tom Brady night is not, no.
Too much like Tom Brady romance in the air.
Is a celebration of everything.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they're getting another one of those in a long time. Championship, Tom Brady, Hall of Fame coach, any of it.
Yep.
So, like, no, that's not the night for it. No.
So does no. Kevin Falk come out that night in a cutoff hoodie?
Oh, I bet. I actually still have all my Belichick hoodies too. No, they all come out in TB12 jerseys. Yeah.
Well, he'd already done that, so you know, just
that's the it's all TB12 jerseys. It's not cutoff hoodies. Cutoff Belichick stuff.
All right, so. You said
there will be a Belichick night, by the way. They'll do that. They'll definitely do that.
Do you really see that happening right
It'll
now?
It'll be at West
Yeah, Stadium, because I yeah. bet I bet it's part of the $25 million for the year. He can just ride the boat.
I don't.
Interesting
I don't,
point.
They're
Scott. Really, I bet it's already in the contract. Like in 4 years, you're doing a Belichick night, and this is you're getting $25 million to sit at home.
But do you think something like, I mean, like you could tell that press conference was a forced press conference and it was very uncomfortable. You really think they want to put on a Belichick night where everybody's uncomfortable? Because yeah. Belichick's not going to forgive Kraft for what he did.
But Belichick also likes money.
Okay.
And Robert has a ton of it. And when, so you guys have been, Dave, I don't know what you do for work. I don't need to know. But you know, if you're employed by somebody, and you go to them and you go like, you know, I need like another $2 an hour, or I need another $20 on my salary, whatever it is. If they really want you, they'll find the $2. They'll find the $20. They'll find whatever amount of money it takes for them to get what they want, because there's an ego thing with owners and business people. And if they really want something, like you did it, you opened up the shows brought to you by New England Pitcher. I love New England Pitcher. I've made purchases for them. I've been to their store in Burlington. They're a great company. Great company.
Absolutely.
But if New England Pitcher really wants to get Tom Brady for an autograph signing and they think they can make money off it. Here's the blank check, Tom. What's the number?
Right.
And that's how Kraft paid $25 million for a freaking 8x10 with Belichick in front of a Patriots logo. That's what he did.
So I'll channel Michael Felger and ask the question. So is this inside info, Jim Stewart?
It's just me guessing.
All right.
But like if you're drafting up, like, okay, we're paying you $25 million or whatever his contract value is, say it's 20, right? It's like you're gonna get paid for a year and you're gonna do this, you're gonna do this, you're gonna do this, you're gonna do this. And Belichick's like, yeah, sure, I'll do that. That doesn't mean he has to smile. Right. He smiles for 30 seconds. He can be up there, be a grump, read a statement, and go away.
Right.
And he can do his own night and, you know, in 4 or 5 years. And although I would think it would be sooner because of the age of people.
Right.
Like, I wouldn't want to see a Bill Belichick night and Robert Kraft not be there. Right? Like,
Bill might.
You know,
that's what I was going to say.
I mean, Bill's 72, or he's turning 72. Like, Robert's in his 80s. So, like, unless they're going to live to be 100, which I don't think they will, you got to do it sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, he waived the time thing for Brady, so he can do the same for Belichick if he wants.
Yeah, you do Bill Knight next in 2025.
Okay.
Even if he's coaching somebody, you do the same thing. If the Brady Knight thing goes great, I don't know that they bang out 80,000 for Belichick Knight, but they probably get a good 40 to 60.
Yeah.
I'd go.
And we all wear hoodies in 90 degree heat.
There you go. So you said you have stories. So we're going to close this out with the top three Jimmy Stewart Patriot related stories that people would not have heard unless they heard you on this podcast.
Untold Patriot stories.
Oh, gosh. Top three.
Yep.
Top three Patriot stories. The first Patriots-related story that comes to mind, and this is definitely telling a tale out of school, I was the producer of record for when Nomar called in on his honeymoon. It was on – this. Don't worry. Give me a minute. It'll tie into the Patriots.
Okay.
Don't worry. It'll tie into the Patriots. This is definitely a tale out of school because I don't know too many people outside the industry who know this.
Cool.
So it's Patriots Monday.
Patriots Monday.
Keep that in mind. So Nomar Garciaparra, you know, it's the big A-Rod trade, the whole, you know, is Nomar really doesn't want to be here. He calls into Dale and Newmy, and he says, of course I want to be here in Boston. Richard Seymour was being interviewed at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. And so a decision had to be made, like, do you take the Nomar phone call? Or, you know, do you tell Nomar, hey, call back in like 30 minutes. We're talking to the Patriots here.
Yeah.
Well, no, the news story is Nomar Garciaparra, who we haven't heard from directly, is calling into the radio station. So you take the call and you make Richard Seymour wait. And so Richard Seymour sat there for the time of the interview, talked to Richard after, and, you know, they had no issues. It was Richard Seymour and somebody else who was down there. I can't remember who it was, but they're listening intently because you know what? They're sports fans too.
Right.
So all that clears out. It's 2:00. Everybody goes on their way and we're like, yeah, like that was great. Because we made Richard Seymour sit there, the Patriots threatened to pull Patriots Monday.
That's not surprising. Wow. Yep.
Because they felt like it was, and there's still this Patriots Red Sox thing. Now, maybe it's not as much, but it's like on a Patriots Monday, you're taking a phone call from Nomar Garciaparra. And it's like, yeah, that's kind of the bigger story.
Right.
So EEI almost lost the rights to Patriots Monday.
Wow.
It's a good one. That's only number three.
Well, so that was the first one that came to mind. That might that might ultimately be number one. Gosh, what else is Patriots related? Oh, I was at the perfect season Super Bowl, the 18-1 Super Bowl.
Yep.
So you are the reason they lost.
It was, it was, the, it was the first Patriots game I had ever attended that I lost.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
I had a pretty good streak going of Patriots, of being in the building for a Patriots game, and
we won't blame you then.
I mean, you can, like, it's fine, but we walked in. I was working for EEI, and we had a great week in Arizona, and I was going to be at the game. I wasn't going to be at the game. I was going to be at the game. I almost didn't. Here's a story for you. This will tie in. I almost wasn't in Arizona. So 08, EEI started making budget cuts. And so one of those budget cuts was we weren't going to, I had been told in December that I was going to Arizona for the week of the Super Bowl. And now we're getting into January and EEI is making budget cuts, which we build a record amount of money. We shouldn't be making budget cuts, but the FM stations weren't pulling their weight. So that's what they decided. So I have 45 businesses that are kind of sucking, and I have one that's really good. So let's punish the one that's really good.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's,
that's a whole nother side topic.
So I get called in the office. Hey, we're not sending you to the Super Bowl this year, but we will send you to spring training. Well, I was going to spring training anyway. So it doesn't. Okay, no problem. Yeah. So I go back to the office, and Michael Holly and I used to have post-show meetings. And so I tell Holly, and Holly's like, that's messed up. So the next day, Dale and Holly go to, Dale and Michael go into Jason Wolf's office. He was the program director. And as the story was told to me, because I wasn't in the room, Michael Holly says, if Jimmy Stewart doesn't go to the Super Bowl, I'm not going to the Super Bowl.
Wow.
Wow, that's like Rudy.
3 days later, I get called into the office. Here's your itinerary. You're going to be sharing a room with such and such, but you're going to Arizona.
Wow.
Michael Holly laid down his Notre Dame jersey on the coach's table for you. I love it.
Yep. So the Super Bowl's happening, and I'm like, this is a terrible game, right? Like, it's a terrible game until the end where Brady walks off the field with the lead. So then the Giants score and they go up. And I turned to Andy, who was the longtime producer of the Big Show, and I go, what are we doing if they lose? We had no plan if the Patriots lost this game.
Right.
We were like, Andy was going to go to the field and get players on the field. I was going to go to the locker room. What do we do? And Andy's like, I don't know. Because Andy's a hardcore Patriots fan.
Yeah.
Like, he was like distraught. And eventually he got together and he's like, well, we'll just do podium audio from the Patriots.
Yeah.
So I was upset that the Patriots had lost, but I knew Tom Coughlin a little bit. So I was happy that he got his first Super Bowl, right? Because Tom Coughlin, I like him. I know he's kind of a gruff, mean head coach, but like, I liked him.
Yeah, we never dealt with anybody like that.
And it was like anytime I call. So Dale Arnold was doing the play-by-play for Boston College football when Tom Coughlin was the head coach. So anytime I'd call the Giants, I'd be like, hey, it's for Dale. And Tom Coughlin would do it.
Oh, that's great.
Like, not even hesitate. The PR person would be like, yep, done. We'll work out the details, but it's a yes. So I was happy for Tom Coughlin. So the next day, I'm flying out of Arizona. I get on my flight, and it's Phoenix. It's Phoenix to New York, and then New York to Boston. New York is my connecting flight. The guy gets on, the pilot gets on and says, you know, we're about to depart for New York, home of your Super Bowl champion, New York Football Giants. And I got the window seat, and I got my head against the window. The person next to me nudges me. And he goes, hey, aren't you excited? Like, the Giants just won the Super Bowl. Like, you know, there's a lot. Eli played great, da-da-da-da. And I go, I'm stopping in New York. My connecting flight is to Boston. And he turns. He goes, oh, my God, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
So I was happy for Tom Coughlin. So there's two stories. I like the first one I told is a lot better. I don't know that I have a third one that's going to beat the first one. So
okay, well then we'll stop it at two then.
Well, let me ask you real quick though, because you've got all the wonderful wrestling memorabilia behind you.
Oh, yeah.
You're a big wrestling guy.
Huge.
So who defeated Brock Lesnar in 1999 for the NCAA championship?
Was it Shelton Benjamin?
It's a good guess, but no, it was we talked a lot about offensive linemen for the Patriots. So
It was Stephen Hochstein.
Well, you got Russ and Stephen put together there, but yeah.
Oh, Russ Hochstein.
Yeah, but you were right with the Stephen.
Stephen Neal.
There you go. All right, so we know that. So you got to ask him the other wrestling question.
Let's see what else we got.
Sarge went. What did he go? 1-2 for 3. I think he did.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to think of the other ones, but it's who? What former Patriot was a combatant in WrestleMania?
Oh, Rob Gronkowski.
Yep. Oh, that's
one. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm sorry. That's not the one I was thinking of, but yes.
All right, so
this was WrestleMania 2.
And I think it was a Royal Rumble.
It was a Battle Royal that Andre won.
Yep.
It was Steve McMichael in that? No, Steve McMichael wasn't in there.
Yeah, he's only been WCW, I think. But yeah, that's another former.
Well,
Patriot.
So Steve McMichael made an appearance at WrestleMania 11 in the corner of Lawrence Taylor.
Yeah.
In the match against Bam Bam.
Okay, there you go. See,
this is another I'll give you a hint. It's another Patriot tight end.
Oh,
All World.
It's wild because I know like I know, and I just can't say the name. I'm visualizing that like he wore the we can't call it what it once was, but he wore a sleeveless. In there, I can't think of his name, so I'm gonna say it's a fail.
Russ Francis.
Yep.
There you go.
I knew as soon as I almost said Marv Cook.
There you go.
And then I wanted to say Ben Coates, but I knew both of those answers were wrong. Yeah. But yeah.
All right. Well, Jay Stu, thank you for taking some time with us tonight. We had a good time.
Hey, Scott. Thanks for asking me. I appreciate that anybody cares about me in any way publicly. So, like, God bless you. I hope that I didn't take up too much. Oxygen in the room, or
that was great.
You know, this becomes the worst downloaded podcast in the history of your podcast.
No.
I don't do a lot of these.
I was just
I authentically don't do a lot of these because, like, I just don't trust people.
Yeah.
Like, I just have this like horrible fear of like somebody's gonna be like, ah, gotcha.
No,
it's like, what did you get me? Like, you asked me a bad question or a question that I didn't want to answer. Yeah.
We make it fun, and I was going to say that this is a very rare appearance, and that's what we're going to put in the little notes for it. Very very rare appearance by Jay Stu. But no, we like to have fun. We like to talk Pat stuff and the untold Patriot stories, and it's appreciated your friendship over the years, and you're somebody that I wanted to have on, and I think you might be one of we've had pretty much all of 98.5 on.
The thing that I'll also say is. Another reason why I don't do a lot of these is because I'm fearful I'm going to say something I shouldn't say.
Yeah.
So I had a few of those moments where I'm like, am I telling a story out of school? Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
It definitely makes it more interesting, but it's like, am I compromising somebody? Am I not? Like,
no, you didn't give anything up.
No, I don't think so. But I never know because I just.
But you know what? You just made me think of something. So. Where can people find you? Because I know you have an awesome wrestling podcast, right? So
yep, Stick to Wrestling podcast, which is on the 98.5 The Sports Hub website. I'm on Twitter, X at I am James Stewart. I'll post some of my videos from the podcast and from the Felger and Maz show. Those are the only two public things that I have. Is Twitter and the website. If you're trying to follow me on another outlet other than that, and I don't know you, and I haven't known you for a long time, you can go fuck yourself.
All right. Wow.
That's a perfect ending.
That's ending it with a stamp there. There we go. And we should probably give a shout out while we're talking wrestling and all that to the Wong family, the Wong father, right? Andy Wong, right? Fellow wrestling nut. So
I love Andy. I talked to Andy today. Because we got to plan the big WrestleMania trip. So,
well, again, Jay Stu, thank you.
I was gonna leave the cuss as my last words, but you wanted me to say something good about Andy, and I don't have enough time to say enough good words about Andy. Because Andy's a good friend. I love him dearly. I've traveled with him. Just a great guy. And the family's great. They've always been good to me.
Andy, Bobby, yep.
You know, so, yeah.
Can't say enough good things about him. We're
but all... I really wanted the cuss word to be my last word. So,
all right. So you said this is your last chance. All right. So, you know what? I usually end the podcast, but I'm going to let you end the podcast.
No. It's okay. Oh, it's all gone. It's Mick Foley did a comedy show. He used to do a comedy routine.
Yeah.
And at the start of it, he'd be like, you know, he'd pick out somebody in the front row and he'd be like, okay, I've got one cuss word, right? So when I say it, like, you got to call me out for saying it, right? So he'd build up, he'd come close and then he wouldn't do it. He'd come close again and he wouldn't do it. And then he'd save it for the big ending story. And so like that was my intent inadvertently, but I'm not going to do it again because I don't do the same spot twice.
All right. Well, Jay Stewart, we'll see if you did have inside info on the Belichick night. Time will tell. And when they announce it, me and Dave are going to say, yeah, he knew something back then. That All right, Jay Stewart, thanks for taking time with us tonight, pal.
Oh, thanks, Dave and Scott, thanks, for man. Having me on. Appreciate you.
Thanks for listening to Untold Patriot Stories with Scott Prusak and Dave Usher. Please follow us on whatever platform you download your podcasts and be sure to tell your friends.